At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat. And boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
I also realized that there's a lot of people that want to be in a seat, and I'm not going to let you just come for this seat. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm gonna make it hard for you to come for this seat. You know, and so it's like, that's my thing, and I think that's the New York in me. That's the South Jamaica Queen. So, you know, South Side, we outside.
We are here with another episode of Not Even D2. Another fire episode, bro. I don't know. I don't remember the last time we dropped a mid episode. I'm not gonna lie, but definitely a good one today with Coach Robert Jones, who is currently the head coach of Norfolk State. Really good coach. Gonna keep it a buck. You're gonna see. He had us week the whole episode. It was good talking to him. He's been there for 12 years and probably the best coach in the HBCU. I'll talk about that a little later, but. We're talking a little bit with him about the TBT that just ended a few days ago. So I'm just curious, like, did you watch the end of it and what you think about it?
No, I did not. I didn't watch the championship game. I actually had work during the game, so I couldn't even watch it. But I heard about how it ended, and you know, I saw post-game videos and stuff.
Nah, the post-game videos was fire. Funny. I was talking to Ty last night about it because him and Marcus King got into it at the end of the D3 game, and then – King was like, they was jacking at the best backcourt in TBT, but I think it's good for the TBT, like having those type of storylines will allow fans to like stay up to date or like follow the league like they would any other professional sports league. So it's a good storyline. Ty Nichols and Marcus King, two of the better players or guards in the tournament. I'm definitely locked in for next year. But let's get back to this episode with Coach Jones, bros. Fun conversation. Coach Jones, he gonna tell you how it is. He gonna say his opinion. He's gonna talk his talk. I love it all. We need more coaches that aren't afraid to get into like media spaces and just speak their mind. But talk to me about this episode and talking with Coach Jones.
Nah, I mean, to your point, beginning of the episode, definitely another fire episode. You know, got a lot of great stuff cooking up. So most definitely make sure you subscribe. Make sure you subscribe now before it really starts taking off. That's all I'm gonna say. But you know, when it comes to Coach Jones, it was a great episode, bro. We've definitely been trying to connect with him for a minute now. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, you could tell why Norfolk State is one of the best, you know, HBCU programs in general without that moniker, college, you know, whatever it is, he's there. You could tell why they're one of the best because, you know, it's who Coach Jones is, his demeanor, the way he approaches every day in terms of a coach, how he wants his players to play, how he builds his program, his thought process on players and the differences between, you know, Power Five and MEAC players. It was overall just a really great conversation with him, man. And I was very grateful that we were able to get him on the pod. And you're right, it was a funny conversation too.
Nah, facts. I gotta talk about something real quick. I mean, we talked about it in the episode, which is good content about the like MEAC awards this past year, Brian Moore not getting player of the year, him not getting coach of the year. But what I want to say is like the people voting for the MEAC awards, they got to like you're in this head coaching position or this SID position because like you're supposed to be a trustworthy source in these award votings or whatever the case may be. So your envy or your hatred or whatever, I'm not saying they're hating, but like, them ignoring the statistics or the facts that are right in front of them is bad because these are like the awards that kind of dictate people's futures, bro. Like Coach Jones already has a resume. He's been coach of the year many times, I think three times, HBCU three times as well. So it's not going to, like, he's in a comfortable position at this point. But imagine, like, this is a first-year head coach or something, and the envy towards his program that they won the chip or something is the reason they didn't get coach of the year. But, like, the number one seed and mostly every conference gets the coach of the year. So for Coach Jones to have more wins than South Carolina State, Norfolk State had, I think, four more wins than them. They were better in some of the statistics, like field goal percentage, stuff like that. And they won the MEAC title. I know postseason is not supposed to go into it, but those are like three for three on why Coach Jones should have won Coach of the Year. But it's, I don't know, it's weird. Like, Coach Jones was acting like he didn't really care, but I'm just saying, like, these coaches got to stop holding, like, their feelings or their personal envy against other coaches, like, because ultimately it is affecting futures.
100%. I mean, we see it at a lot of different levels, bro. Kind of, you know, a little bit in the NBA in some seasons where, you know, reporters bias, where they're supposed to be objective, will kind of shine through the vote. And you're 100% right, bro. I mean, he definitely should have won that Coach of the Year award. Pivoting to a different topic, though, just so the viewers know where he came from and why I think his story is cool. Coach Jones came from a Division III school, bro. He attended SUNY New Paltz. He's from the city, from South Jamaica, Queens. Feel me? So humble beginnings, bro. Into, you know, like he said, he doesn't have any more space for any more of those Coach of the Year awards. So he's definitely a successful man right now, for sure.
Yeah, I think it was Coach Scary. For those who don't know, it's Coach of Towson, but he was saying he likes his staff to have some sort of small college background. And whether it's the New York City background you just mentioned or the D3 grind, that, like, it builds these coaches to, you know, Coach Jones won, I don't even know how many MEAC titles, a lot. He's been a Coach of the Year a lot, but he's still, like, going hard in the portal or going hard this offseason. Yeah. So it's those experiences in the background that's building him to the coach he is this year. I seen a tweet he put the other day, and it's just, I'm going to say, a precursor into this episode of how he, like, really just speaking the truth all the time. He said, in college, that, in quotes, bag, and end quotes, you've been working on, go out the window. The bag for college is pick and roll reads, catch and shoot threes, defending, IQ plays, the four move combo with the spin you will probably never do. But it's facts. Like, a lot of people right now think college sports or college basketball, for that matter, is just like, I'm chasing that bag. But if you really want to chase a bigger bag, it's those, you know, pick and roll reads or catch and shoot threes. So I'm a big fan of Coach Jones. Like, we wasn't tapped in on Norfolk, or I should say I wasn't this past year, but now moving forward, I'm a big fan, and I hope Coach Jones definitely, like, keep it rolling.
Me too. I'm just as big a fan as you are, bro. It's definitely, like you said, definitely was a great convo with him, and no surprise why they're so tough.
Nah, but like Ruta said, we got a lot in store. I'm not going to drop any sneak peeks or nothing. We just going to keep dropping fire episodes. Make sure you subscribe. Go follow us at Not Even D2. And let's hear from Coach Jones. We are here with our guy, Coach Jones. How you doing today, Coach?
Hey, what's up, y'all? How y'all doing?
Doing good. Appreciate you getting on, Coach. I'm definitely excited for this episode. Talk to us a little bit about what you've been doing today, Coach.
Man, we just had workouts and had a couple coaches' meetings, and that's it, really. So it's been a light day.
Word. One thing I was kind of curious about, I mentioned off air how I seen you on Instagram, like, at a tournament. Do you got any coaching? Because obviously you guys have, like, similar schedules. Do you got any coaching friends or, like, guys you trust around the country that you connect with during all seasons?
There's a lot of different people I talk to. I mean, you know, in this business, it's hard to have friends. There's a lot of colleagues, you know what I mean, a lot of peers and stuff like that. So it's definitely, you know, a lot of guys that I talk to. Here and there about a whole bunch of different things. So I can't say there's anybody that I lean on or talk to the most. I mean, I talk to my regular friends about that. You know, some of them happen to be coaching now, like some of them coach AAU and stuff like that, you know, coming up or whatever. But I just talk to people like my college teammates, stuff like people I've been known for years, 20 years or more. You know, I'm not really in the business at this point in my life of making a whole bunch of new friends. But I do think that there are a lot of people that you can, you know, you could still connect with people, though, you know, and still have a conversation with them, you know, stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, definitely a good point. One thing I was wondering about, too, you KJ had mentioned how you're watching your son play in an AAU mm-hmm. tournament, you know, recently. And, you know, we've talked mm-hmm. to different coaches on here who have kids, and they talk about their relationship with them when it comes to coaching them in basketball. So if you could share any details about that dynamic, I'd love to hear that, too.
It's definitely a different dynamic, you know, because it's kind of hard to watch being a father, because it's like I coach every day. You know, I'm a basketball coach. That's how I feed the, you know, family and everything else. So it's like some of the plays I should be probably cheering for from a dad standpoint, I'm always going to find, well, you should have did this, you know, should did, you know, and I might not, I'm not one of the people that say a lot of things out loud, but like, I think a lot of times, like, it's hard to be like a full father, you know, when you full-time basketball coach, you know what I'm saying? It's like even like my son, he won play of the year in his conference this year and stuff like that. And I was like happy for him. But at the same time, I know like a father that probably wasn't in this profession, you know, they would probably be super ecstatic, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So like, even the other day, like he had a game winning shot and he ran over to me and gave me like a five or whatever. And I'm just like, yeah, all right. You know what I mean? I expect it. You know what I'm saying? That's what you work for. Like, I expected you to make that shot. I ain't, you know, like, but for him, you know, he's 17 years old. So it's like, it's a big deal. And like, for like the crowd, it was a big deal. But for me, I was like, yo, I done seen you make that shot time and time again. So it's like, it wasn't like a big deal. So I do think that's some father stuff that's taking care. And then I think also, he's a kid that got college offers and everything like that. But I think that he could have more if it wasn't because of me. I think people mm-hmm. almost automatically mm-hmm. assume that he's going to play for me, you know, and that's what I hear from like when I'm on the road, like, oh yeah, he's going to play for you and stuff like that. I'm like, we never really talked about that, you know, like we talked about it for the first time the other day, honestly, like the first mm-hmm. time in his life, we talked about him possibly playing for me, but people mm-hmm. feel like it's like a foregone conclusion that he would just play for me or that I want him to play for me. Like people don't think about that aspect of it too, you know, but they just think that, you know, you as dad and, you know, that's your son, he gonna just play for you and you know, whatever. We ain't gonna waste our time recruiting him. And so mm-hmm. I was like, all right, you know, do what you want.
Word.
You
know? So for the viewers that don't know, you actually offered your son. So just talk about like that moment where you hesitant to do that and what his reaction when you first gave him that.
I think for me is that like I was, you know, mentioned, it's like I waited for somebody else to offer him first. You know, I didn't want to be like the guy to offer him first. Like, I mean, because, you know, it is my son. You know, it was technically, being that I'm the one that's giving out college scholarships, I can always give my son a scholarship. But that's like, I want him to earn it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want him to, like, really, really earn the situation. Like, I didn't want him to be, just because your daddy is a coach, you know, here's a scholarship or whatever. And honestly, probably, you know, in theory, it probably should be like that because I'm saving myself $40,000, you know what I mean? Like, I should just give him one. But at the same time, it's like I wanted to earn it. So, like, after he got one from an offer from Stetson University in Florida, after he got that offer, and then Columbia University called him, after those two happened, then I offered him. So I was really, like, his third offer. And I know that might sound crazy to people. People probably going to, you know, look at this like, damn, you kind of hard on him, you know what I mean? But it's like, you know, go get your own first, and then, you know, if all else fails, or if you want to play, and if I want you to play, then, you know, then we'll do this thing, you know? So, yeah, that was my take on the whole situation with the offering of him a scholarship.
Nah, definitely appreciate that insight, Coach. And shout out to your son, too, because, you know, you said he has 6-7 offers. That's dope, big dope. And I know you said you're still hard on him, but I know deep down, you already said it, but I'm sure you're very proud of him. So definitely shout out to him. But, you know, I want to talk some Norfolk, you know, state basketball with you real quick. You know, mm-hmm. last year you guys made the tournament, MEAC title, right? Great year for you guys last year. But this year you guys have a lot of new players, some new faces on the team. So just talk about next year's NSU roster and, you know, preseason so far.
Well, it's going to be a very different roster than people have seen. You know, it's 10 new people. So some of the mainstays that people, you know, got used to last year aren't here anymore. So it's time to make new memories with new people, you know. And I think that that's our biggest thing right now, is trying to put everything together, you know, trying to really build this culture. Because like right now, the coaches are the culture. You know what I mean? There is no people that's carrying over the culture, right? So it's like we got to do our job and be the culture until someone else can be the culture, until the team can be the culture. So we've been really doing that, harping on it. I know sometimes the guys probably think that like we like super hard on them or something like that, but it's like at the same time, is you know, you can't veer from the culture that's been working, because the moment you do that, you just started a new culture. You know what I mean? So it's a shell shock to some. Some are adjusting well. Some realize they have no choice but to adjust. You know what I mean? And you know, but some of them are learning the hard way about that they have no choice but to adjust the situation. And you know, we'll see what happens. You know, I think that we'll have a good year. I am excited about some of the guys that we got, but at the same time, this is all like a big ball of clay that we got to try to mold into something that's worth seeing. You know, yeah. I think that history has shown that we've been able to do that. But once again, this is a new year, and you can't rely on what you did last year. You know, sports is what have you done for me lately society, right? You know, no one cares about the championship that you got last. I mean, people care, but they don't care at the same time, because at the same time, it's like, if you don't win it this year, they're like, oh, you ain't winning this year. We're like, damn, I won that last year, and I won it 2 years before that, and I won it year before that, too. You know, so it's like, you know, it's a lot of championships that we done got in here. You know, like, I mean, we've got a lot of championships, so, but people are not going to care if you don't do it again. You know, it's like, whatever you've done, you got to do it again and do it again and do it again until you can't do it, you know, no more.
Nah, I appreciate that perspective for sure, because that's real rap. And I like the culture point you brought up, because now today with transfer portal, it's like, yeah, each year, each roster is going to be completely different. So it's like, what are the coaches doing to instill that grit, toughness, whatever the program's built upon, and not letting like new faces determine that. But so Joe Bryant, a few years ago, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, he was player of the year, and then he graduated. And then you brought in Jamari Thomas from UNC Wilmington. He ended up being player of the year. And then he left or graduated. And then you brought in B-more from Murray State. And then he ended up becoming, he should have won MEAC player of the year, in my opinion, but he was newcomer player of the year. So I'm just curious, like, what you're actually looking for in the portal, because I just brought the examples of year after year, you lose arguably your best player, and then you bring in an underrated player, and they end up at the top of the MEAC. So just talk about like what you're looking at year to year.
I mean, I just look at what fits for me. You know, like for me, I like a guard who's like, you know, tough. I mean, any player, I like, you gotta be tough to play for me. You can't be soft to play for me. I don't really deal well with soft. Like, you know, like that don't really do nothing for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, so if you're not tough, man, you can't play for me. And I'm sure, like, you know, I know y'all talked about B-more, and I know you asked about Jaden Hawkins. They'll tell you straight up, you can't, you know, you gotta have, you can't be soft to play for me. So it's like looking for somebody that's tough, looking for somebody from a guard standpoint that can handle the ball, who can, you know, shoot, dribble. You know, I mean, some stuff gonna sound cliche-ish, but it's like there's people that can't do it too, though. You know, so, and I really look for guards who are able to get downhill, because a lot of our offense is predicated on getting downhill. So if you can get downhill, you're gonna be a successful guard in this system. If you can't get downhill, then hopefully we have somebody that can get downhill that can kick it to you, and then you'll be successful too. But the most successful guards for us have been guards that have been able to get downhill and stuff like that. And if you can make a three, then you're really successful, you know, for us. So that's my thing. Like, I like, you know, paint touches, man. You know, you gotta be able to get a paint touch. And every guard in the country can't get a paint touch. You know, some guys are just shooters, they're just snipers, and they can't get a paint touch, you know. But, you know, you hope that you have somebody that can get one, you know, for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's in college basketball, in the NBA, there's specialists, right? There's guys who are very good at, you know, one or two things. But when you can have those, you know, guards or forwards that can do multiple different things, that's when you, you know, have success. Coach, I'm not, forgive me for this, I'm not trying to age you, coach, but you've been in college basketball for a minute now, you know what I'm saying? And I'm just wondering, you've probably seen like the development or the changes in basketball from, with whatever specific year you started in college basketball to now. So just talk about some of the evolution of basketball that you've seen, how you, I know you say you don't change your philosophies, but maybe how you've had to like maybe adapt to a new form or new style of hoops.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you change a little bit of like I said, the wrinkles in your plays offensively. Like you know, before, like when I first started, it was probably like a lot of 3-out, 2-in offenses. You know what I mean? Then it kind of went to 4-out, 1-in. You know what I mean? And then now it's like a lot of 5-out. Even though 4-out, 1-in is still pretty popular, there's really not a lot of three out, two in offense at all. You know, and so it's like all those plays that I might have had when I first started, it was like in the trash can somewhere. You know, it's because like that's not the way the game is played anymore. That's not just, you know, you can't be so archaic that you're running staggers for, like, as one of my assistant coaches said, staggers for mid ranges. Like, no one's running a stagger for a mid range anymore. Like, that's archaic, right? You know, so I think the game has changed a little bit with post play. You know, I think that we've been blessed to have some guys who could score the ball in the post, but a lot of times now, guys, like, your best post players are your guys who are, like, in the dunker spots, in the pick and roll and stuff like that, lob threats. Those constitute a post player now, you know. So, like, the game has changed in that regard, and like, you gotta adapt to the changes, you know. Before, you know, like I said, a lot of stuff changed offensively, defensively. I mean, you can still kind of do what you want, you know, man to man, you know, whatever. Just, like, that hasn't really changed that much, but offensively, you know, it's definitely like, you know, you look for guys who can shoot the three a little bit more because, you know, you space the floor, you know. So it's like things have changed offensively that I've had to adapt to more than probably a defensive change.
Word. There's a definitely a ton we're going to get into in your coaching career, but I want to rewind a little bit into your playing career, because I feel like a lot of people don't know you was really a basket. You played Division III too, so yes. that's a connection we got with you. But just talk about a little about your game, because I want to hear what you was tough at first.
Well, for me, I'm 6'8" now, but I grew 3 inches my junior year in college though, so it's like. I grew real late, so I'm hoping my son don't have that same gene because, well, I mean, he in a different day and age because now he could transfer. You know what I mean? It'll look all great, but like back then, nobody was thinking about transferring, you know, or whatever. So like when I grew to 3 inches, it's like, shit, it was like just like, you know, no one cared, right? You know, yeah. But I was always like coming into college, I was like a point forward, like I was like 6'4", 6'5"-ish or whatever, and I could handle the ball and things like that. So. I didn't play my last year of high school due to we can spend a whole bunch of time with that, but basically a coaching conflict, you know what I mean? But like, yeah. Nothing serious, you know, not nothing crazy, but just a disagreement on philosophies, I guess. So I didn't play my senior. So I went to a camp and I ended up getting, you know, Division III school, State University of New York, SUNY New Paltz, to take me. And I went there and I'm like, yo, I was going, you know, hey, I'm going to play. But the thing I say is that because I played a guard position and then when they moved me to like the forward at New Paltz, it was like, for real, I'll be honest with you, I was like kind of running circles around on people because it was like I was really a guard. I had a slow center guarding me, you know,
yeah.
So I was able to do whatever I wanted to do. So that was my advantage. Like that was my like biggest advantage because I went from playing like a guard to now being one of the bigger people on the team. But I still retained my skills and you know, my coach allowed me to use my guard skills to take people off the dribble and do things like that. So I was able to make, you know, Division III All-American. My junior year, I made Division III All-American, which is still, like, you know, a tremendous highlight. Like I always say, man, if you make All-American at anything, you was one of the best in the country at that point in time. You know, so that's something that you can't, you know, I would never give that up, right? You know what I mean? So I had a great time though. Like I tell people all the time, like Division III, yeah, it ain't like you ain't gonna play in front of 20,000 people. You know, you ain't gonna get all the gear and all of this, but it's like it's genuine basketball. It's better basketball than what people think it is. And I would say a lot of them Division III cats could play Division I. A lot of times Division I is just about the opportunity that you're able to get. You know what I'm saying? Like it's a lot about opportunity. You know, like some Division III cats, like they just wasn't seen enough. You know, but you get on that court and they can ball, you know, and I believe I was one of those guys because, like, you know, being a Division III All-American, you know, like when I played these Division I guys, it didn't really seem that hard though. Like, because I was like one of the best in Division III, you know, so I believe that if you're one of the best in Division III, you're going to be one of the good ones in Division I too. But you see it now in this day and age, like I joke with my son. And I, you know, I joke with him. This is really a joke, more of a joke than serious. But it's like, remember, I don't know if you remember, guys, remember when Duncan Robinson played Division III? He averaged 16, right? He transferred all the way up to Michigan in this day and age, right?
Mm-hmm.
The year but the year I was a Division III All-American, I averaged 16 and a half and 11.4 rebounds. I was like, y'all went power four, you know, and 3.4 and 3.4 blocks. I was fourth in the country.
Oh, you was bugging then.
And second in rebounds. I was second in rebounds in the country, fourth in blocks that year. or whatever. I was like, yo, man, I would have had the crazy NIL deal. You know what I mean? Like, but at that point in time, I never thought about transfer. I never thought about leaving New Paltz, not one time. I never thought about leaving New Paltz. I was having the time of my life up there. You know, everything was great. I was balling. You know what I mean? I was in the, you know, throwing parties. Everything was great. Like, I didn't think about leaving out not one time. So I'm just like, yo, when I do see them Division I dudes, like if I play them like on, you know, the like Dykeman or like back then it was like, you know, we had Parks and Queens at Lincoln Park, stuff like that or whatever, that was like good, you know, pro-am tournaments or whatever, which was called like Unlimited back then, really. You know what I mean? It was like that. I'm like, yo, I'm just gonna see them cats then and then show them what's up. Like, I ain't thinking about it. Was never thought about transferring, though. Never thought about transferring.
Nah, that whole story you just told us, Coach, I really appreciate that. I mean, you're preaching to the choir with KJ and I. We've been, you know, we're two Division III players. We finished up our careers playing. And, you know, we have been preaching to everyone. And it's not like it's anything new, like you're saying, like, but we've been preaching to everyone that these D3 guys, like you said, we can ball. Like when it gets in between these lines, like there's a lot of great hoopers, you know, in Division III. And I'm wondering, are you two questions? I know you've been, it's almost 19 years that you've been with the Spartans, but, and I know that's probably taken up a lot of your time, but are you tapped into SUNY New Paltz basketball? Because they won their SUNY Act a couple years ago. And D3 TBT is in the Final Four right now. So I'm wondering, yeah.
I'm going to tell you about that, right? Like, first of all, the coach at New Paltz was my teammate, Keith
Kim. Oh, word?
Teammate. So, like, yeah, he never passed the ball or whatever. But, you know, I went to watch them play, like, a couple years ago. Because, you know, like I said, it's my teammate. And I talked to them after the game, you know, all that stuff, like, you know, all that coaching stuff, right? And I'm like, yo, y'all passed the ball so well. I was like, who taught y'all that? Because he didn't pass the ball. So, but at the same time, I was happy that they finally, because like, it's been, you know, many years coming that they finally got over the hump to get to the NCAA tournament to win a championship. You know, for a long time, back in 99, when I played, I was a sophomore in 99, that ECAC championship was the only championship in school history. And I was a part of that team. And I was like, they can't get another championship? Like, they've been 20, you know, something years. And they finally got a championship. So I was happy about that. Now with that, We Are D3, or what is it? Was it?
Yeah, like, We Are D3.
D3, right? Now that coach used to coach at New Paltz too.
After, facts.
Like he got dismissed because he didn't really, you know, whatever, right? But, you know, but it's like, you know, they ran up a body there. But at the same time, coach, you know, he, I met him before. He's a cool dude, and I swear to you, I was going to post on my story when it was kicking the hell out of that team by 20 or whatever. I was about to post like, yo, man, I'm happy, so happy for these D3 dudes, man. I was, you know, I played D3 because a lot of people don't know, you know, because they think you're a Division I coach, you only play, you know, Division I. That was like, yo, I played D3. I'm happy they're kicking them, right? And then all of a sudden things got real sticky. I'm like, yo, what are they doing? I'm actually sitting in the living room screaming at the TV like I was coaching the game. Because I was so mad. I was so – that kid that's a good player, what's his name?
Ty Nichols.
Man, he pissed me off, man. Like, he had a four-on-one. He was trying to be too fast.
He threw the behind the back like that, yeah.
And then they went on, like, the crazy run, and they basically almost lost the game. And I'm like, yo, this kid, man, this kid is driving me crazy right now. But he's a good player, great player, you know what I mean, for that, especially for, you know, that team and stuff like that. So, I mean, he's their go-to guy, I mean, honestly. But at the same time, he almost blew everything for them with that silly – 4-on-1 instead of laying the ball up, he's trying to get too fancy, and then, you know, he kept smiling afterwards. I was just smiling for him, man. You almost lost the game.
You know? Yo, so coach, we've been doing, like, we traveled with them. We've been doing media with the team, so Ty's our guy. So I'm a definitely screen record this little part of the episode and send him it.
Yeah, tell him, I don't care. It's like, yo, man, you almost blew the game, man. You almost blew the game. He's been doing a great job in the tournament. He's a great, great player. You know, good player. You know, I guess he plays overseas, right? You make, you know, whatever. Yeah. I forgot what country he plays in. But it's like, you almost blew the money, man. You know, for real. Like, you know, like that was like a careless, like, yo, we up 20 player. And that's something I talk to my guys about, is that sometimes people make up 20 plays, you know what I mean? Or whatever. They're like, man, I could just shoot this because, yo, we up 20. But then all of a sudden it's down to 2, and you're like, yo, damn, I could have got the game over with a layup, you know, facts. And stuff like that. So, you know, hopefully he has a good game. What, they play again tomorrow or something like that? Tomorrow maybe they play?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Yeah, so tomorrow. Hopefully, I am pulling for those guys. I'm pulling for Coach Mike and everything like that. I'm pulling for all of those guys because, I did play D3 basketball. So it's good to see that something that I told guys for years that, you know, y'all, the gap ain't that difference. You know what I mean? It ain't that big. The gap is more from an athletic standpoint than it is from a skill standpoint.
Say that all the time. Yep.
You know, athletically, you're going to get the guys that's bigger, jump higher. Like D3, like, you know, is like below the rim for real. Like, yeah, if you could dunk at D3, you look really good, right? You know, because a lot of guys, you know, playing below the rim, but they're like super skilled though. You know, like they can really shoot it. They can really do things, but they just not playing above the rim. And that's the biggest difference that people think, you know, like, so like, you know, I'm happy the D3 team is making a good run though. Let's just say that.
Nah, for sure. Shout out to those guys. And, you know, shout out to you too, because in your own way, you're putting on for D3 too, because you're killing it as a college coach, head coach, you know what I'm saying, NSU. So definitely giving hope to, you know, all the D3 guys that, you know, they can make it big for sure. I want to transition back to NSU. When KJ and I were, you know, developing the questions, this is a conversation that kind of came up between him and I, the differences between MEAC schools versus a P5 schools recruiting specifically, right? Because you've coached a lot of great players and developed them into real NBA pros, G League, overseas pros. So just talk about that recruiting aspect that's maybe different.
It almost goes along the lines of what I just said about D3. Like, you know what I mean? There's a lot of players that like here that could play at a Power 5 level. They just didn't get the opportunity to, you know what I mean? Or the chance or whatever the case is. I mean, you look at guys who've left the program, right? You know, like look at a kid like you said, Jamari Thomas, you know? I mean, he went to South Carolina, still averaged 13. He only averaged like three less than he averaged at Norfolk State, you know? So people think that, you know, a lot of times, oh, you go to Norfolk State. Like, even like with Brian, the people think that, you know, oh, he only averaged 18 because he left Murray and came to Norfolk State. Well, first of all, Norfolk State would beat Murray. You know, that's first of all. And then secondly, is that we only play 14 conference games due to our conference being small, right? So you really get in most of those stats.
Averages, yeah.
Non-conference. Facts. You know what I mean? Like when we're playing the Baylors of the world, the this, the that, we know we all across the country with it, you know, because like it's hard to get a game, you know, so we got to play whoever we got to play. So that's the part that people don't understand. It's not like people drop down and come here and all of a sudden their stats go up. Is that no, they get an opportunity, you know, and then really they're getting these stats against people that are probably higher than the level they even came from, you know what I mean? So that's why, like, you know, like people don't understand that. So it's really, like I said, almost like the D3, D1 thing is that a lot of these guys, you know, can play at that P5. Like, you know, my first recruit here ever was Kyle O'Quinn. You know what I mean? Kyle O'Quinn was my first recruit here ever. And Kyle, you know, he showed, I mean, he was an 8-year NBA pro. You know what I mean? Like, he never played in the G League, none of that stuff, right? All from Norfolk State. You know, it just shows you that, you know, he could play. You know, like, he was one of the best people. He got drafted. It wasn't like a free agent deal. He got drafted to the NBA. So at that point in time in 2012, he was one of the best players in the world. And that's who gets drafted, right? The best players in the world technically get drafted, right? So he got drafted from Norfolk State, and he stayed there for 8 straight years in the NBA. No G League, none of that other stuff. There's no bouncing back and forth, no all that stuff. You know, he stayed there and got his pension and everything. So, you know, it just shows that it's the same scenario, man. Like, people think that, oh, it's the MEAC, you know, you can't play in SEC. Nah, man. So some of the favorite SEC schools won't play us. And that's just the truth, you know, and that's just and Brian will tell you, because we used to tell them that, you know, they said they're not gonna play, they're scared to play and stuff like that, you know. So it's like, it's always like, perception is not always reality with that situation, you know.
Nah, facts. Coach, I was actually gonna ask you about that, like how you're kind of building your non-conference schedule, because I saw you play Baylor, but I was also seeing like a lot of like low majors, but I figured that you're trying to play the best competition. So what you think, teams are just like nervous to lose against like a MEAC school, or what's that like trying to high major schools to play against you?
That's all the way to fact. Like, if you look at some schedules, right, and this is no offense to nobody, it might sound crazy, but people know it's the truth, you know, and all I know to do is speak the truth, is that, like, there's people that will play, like, say, Coppin State or Eastern Shore or stuff like that, but they won't play. But when we call to play, they'll be like, nah, I don't know. You know what I mean? Because, like, they don't want to lose to an HBCU, you know what I mean? And then they know that we're, like, probably the best, for real, HBCU, and we're one of the best mid-majors in the country. So it's like we already skipped that HBCU round, you know? So now it's like, oh, we really not messing with them dudes. We ain't playing against them dudes, you know? So that's why it's kind of hard for us to find games, really. That's why, like, I thank teams that, like, actually do play us, because you really put yourself in a bind because you know you got a good chance that you could lose. You know, like you look at a situation like even last year, you know, everybody was on High Point crazy and stuff like that. You know, and we went down there.
Out of there.
Yeah, we was their only loss at home all year. You know, mm-hmm. And then a couple years ago, you know, VCU, you know, always this, that, a third. You know, we went up there, zipped them up too. You know, so it's like there's a lot of schools that won't play us. You know, so like I appreciate the schools that do play us because the way I say it, man, is that like in recruiting, and you guys probably heard it because you probably heard it even D3, right? But it's like we hear too. People will talk bad about you. They talk bad, like, oh, don't go. Why you go to HBCU? Why you doing that? Why you doing that? All right, but if we're so bad, in quotes, if you guys got all these resources, which you do, you know, the Power Five's got plenty of resources and stuff like that, then why are y'all scared to play us? You know, like if you got everything in the world,
real rap,
that we don't have, right? Then like, okay, if I had a Rolls Royce, which I don't have a Rolls Royce, but I don't, right? Then why would I be scared to go against a Honda? You know what I mean? Like, my Rolls Royce should look better than this Honda. But sometimes the people driving the Rolls Royce don't know how to drive either. You know, and if people driving a Honda.
You're talking now.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, that's what happens too. You know, and people don't want to know that part of it and stuff like that. Is that sometimes people, you talk about players got chances that they can't. Some coaches got chances that maybe they don't deserve. So now it's like they're scared to play against a coach that they know what they're doing, you know? So it's like a lot of times those situations happen too. But like I said, you know, we do have a schedule this year. Like I said, I thank everybody for playing us. And people probably don't understand, like, why are we thanking them for playing us? But like, they don't understand our struggle to get games. It's like, it's always tough. Even there's 14 Division I schools in Virginia. Honestly, we should be able to play a whole non-conference schedule in Virginia if we wanted to, you know? But they don't want to play. So this year we were able to get four Virginia schools this year, I think. Yeah. So that's like an all-time high, honestly. And, you know, we hope to try to, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. We hope to try to defeat all of them because, I mean, you know, anytime it's an in-state, you know, situation, it's a rival because you want to show that you're the best in the state. But I just thank them schools for even playing us, man. I thank them schools for even playing us.
Man, shout out to the four Virginia schools that y'all playing next year. Definitely, you know, going to be tapped in on those games. You know, hopefully you guys go 4-0 against them. I wanted to ask you, we kind of shifted away from it a little bit, but, you know, talking about you, like, coaching MEAC players of the years, right, NBA pros, overseas guys, right, mm-hmm. like, what's your approach to players and helping them reach their full potential? Because ultimately it seems like, yeah, be more played well at Murray State, but then he blossomed into such a great player at NSU. You know what I mean? So just talk about your process with that.
I mean, you know, once again, man, transparency. And like I said, be more. No, like, I'm going to be transparent as I can. That's the only way I know how to be. I don't know how to give you this all uppity political coach talk or whatever. You know, like, I don't know that, man. You know, it's like, I just know how to be.
Hey, we'll take you as you are, man, for real.
Yeah. Well, thank you, man. but the thing that I say, though, is that a lot of coaches are not transparent enough with the situation that's really at hand, right? Is that, like, they let egos get in the way and things like that. And yeah, I got an ego. Like, you're gonna do it my way, right? But at the same time, the better you look, the better we look, the better I look. You know what I mean? So it's like, why wouldn't I want you to be the best that you can be? Because you're probably gonna make me look good. You know, like, your player of the year situation is gonna probably get me coach of the year. So why wouldn't I put you in a situation to make you look the best that you could possibly be so I can look the best that I possibly could be? You know, it's like, you know, I know, you know, y'all asked me for the things, but it's like, you know, on the wall back here, like I said, this is not all of them, but it's like, you know, it's like all the coach of the year, like a lot of coach of the year was. Like, I've been fortunate to get 14 different ones in my career, but because I had good players too, though, you know, like, I couldn't get 14 coach of the year awards if I was coaching a bunch of bums, you know, like, so it's like, you know, you got to be able to recruit well, and then with the kids you recruit, make them reach their ceiling, whatever that ceiling is. If their ceiling is 18 points a game, let's go. If it's 9 points a game, let's do it. You know, but whenever you're able to reach your ceiling, we're going to look better. And, you know, the program's going to look better. And at the end of the day, I'm going to look better. So let's get, we all in this together. You know what I mean? Like, let's work.
Nah, for real. That's real rap. That's real rap for sure, as KJ says. But this is the last question before we go into break, Coach. But Norfolk State is currently fourth in the nation in D1 basketball for the longest streak of 500 or better conference records. So how do you sustain that type of success at the Division I level?
Man, people ask me that. That's a question that people ask me that I really just say, you know, and it's going to sound like a real bad answer. And that should be like an easy answer, but it's like, you know, we just work hard, man. Like, and I guess technically everybody's supposed to be working hard, and I don't really know what everybody's doing, from institution to institution. But I know we work really hard. I know anybody who played for us will say the exact same thing, man, that we work really, really hard. So, I've been fortunate enough to be a part of a lot of those over 500 records. But honestly, there was probably a good 8 or 9, maybe, I forget the exact number, before I even got here. So the foundation was already set. It's just that we've been able to take the foundation and elevate it. You know, we've been able to take the foundation and build the first floor, the second floor. You know what I mean? But the foundation was already set before I even got here. We just built a better house than what it was, you know, in the past. But, you know, so shout out to the people that came before me. You know, it's just like, I think that's the thing that helps too, is that you got to have I could talk my talk because I think I got some stuff to back it up. But it's also there's a level of humility too that I do understand that Norfolk State was here before me and they'll be here after me too. You know what I mean? So it's like, but while I'm here though, I'm gonna make it hard for whoever come take this job after me though. You know, like while I'm here. So, but I know that, you know, it's been before me and it's gonna be after me. You know, whether I go to another institution, whether I'm fired or whether I'm dead, Norfolk State University is going to still be here. So I just try to make the best out of the situation while I'm here.
Nah, yeah, you can see that humility, but like at this point in your career, you don't need to be that humble saying like the coach or the players making you better or look good. Like obviously that's true, but you could just pop it. Like I'm a however many times HBCU coach of the year, like that's just that. But I respect that you're still saying like, oh, the players is the one making me look good. But stay with us while we take a quick break. All right, we are back with Coach Jones on the Not Even D2 pod. So this is so crazy to me, but we definitely got to talk about it. So while we were talking with B-More on the episode, we were like, so you want mid-major player of the year, but you didn't win conference player of the year. And I was like, that's so backward in itself. And then you look at it, like you guys finished number one. You had over 20 wins again. And you didn't win coach of the year. So it's like, what's going on? So I'm just curious if you could kind of talk about like your thought process or your perspective behind like the award situation this past year, but also like just the chip on Norfolk State's shoulder that you got to continuously wear year to year.
I think this year was a little bit of Norfolk State fatigue. You know what I mean? It's like we done won so many awards or championships that, you know, I mean, let's face it, the coaches and the SIDs vote for this thing. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, yeah, I think every coach, I don't really got any problem with any coaches in the league. And, you know, we speak on, you know, here and there about different things. But everybody's a competitor. Like, you don't want to see one program just keep shining, you know, all over yours. You know, I mean, let's just, you know, just keep it real. So I think it came a Norfolk State fatigue because that was going to be our fourth straight player of the year. And honestly, it really, no reason why it shouldn't have been fourth straight, you know. And this is no, you know, situation, you know, like the kid Blake Harper's a good kid. He went to, you know, ended up going to Creighton, you know, for a good bag and stuff like that. So it's like good job to that kid or whatever. But at the same time, man, when the stats are similar, winning is the tiebreaker, in my opinion. Like, it was one thing if the kid Blake was averaging 29 points a game. It's like, damn, you know, this kid's unstoppable. You know, we can't do nothing. You know, but you can't give the player of the year, you know, to a team. I think they finished fourth place, maybe.
It was like 500 in conference.
Yeah, 500 in conference, maybe under 500 overall. They finished fourth place in the thing to a kid that team. We basically led the MEAC from start to finish last year. You know, like we ended up tying at the end because we slipped a little bit at the end, but we still finished first. Like after the first weekend, we was in first place. After the last weekend, we was in first place. You know what I mean? So, like, we led from start to finish, and a kid is averaging almost 19 points a game on a team that won 24 games and things like that, and he doesn't get played. Like, it still probably would have been a travesty, even if it was co-player of the year, but at least I know somebody's, alive out there. You know, like, what are we watching? Like, really? And like I said, you know, like, Blake is a good kid, good player. Man, I know Howard, you know, going to miss him. But, you know, kid got to do what he got to do, man. So he's a good player. Great. He's probably got a chance. I know, obviously he's a little younger than Brian. So his ceiling is probably higher than Brian's, you know, honestly, because of the youth, right? But what he did wasn't better than what Brian did last year. Honestly, Brian, you know, on a lesser team would have averaged 25. Like, we had other guys who could play. We had Christian Ings. We had Jelani Darden. We had, you know, Kuel Madin. We had all these guys, Chris Field, you know, all the guys who can play that he couldn't probably average 25 with us because somebody else got to shoot the ball now. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, you can't average that with us. So, like I said, when the stats are similar, winning should be the tiebreaker. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when the stats are similar. And I don't think that the league did a good job of that, but thank God for College Insider who got it right. You know, they got it right with the mid-major player of the year. And you know, honestly, that's like a real big jump with mid-major player of the year, but they got it right. And then I think he won State of Virginia player of the year too, obviously. So, you know, they got it right when it comes to that too. But once again, the winning mattered, right? You know what I mean? Like, the best player on the best team got it. I mean, why is he not the player of the year? The best team? I mean, why not?
And usually the best team, their coach get player of the year, but like you said, it's just voter fatigue. So
because it's like only way you don't get player of the, I mean coach of the year is that if like somebody who like was like seventh, like preseason seventh, finishes like second. You know what I'm saying? It's like, no, that coach did a great job. He got to get player of the year. I mean coach of the year. But it's like when we were preseason number two, we finished one. You know what I mean? Like. The guy, and that's my man, you know, Eric Martin, and congrats to him, you know, again, you know, because he got that South Carolina State, you know, turning the right way, is that they was preseason number three. They finished two. We did the same thing. but we finished one. You know what I mean? Like, but people don't see that. They just think that, no, like, I really have people that say, like, yo, you guys win the league every year. No, we don't. We win it a lot, but we don't win it every year. But it's because of almost a brainwashing now that people think that we win it every year, that I do think that sometimes it slights awards and things like that because you almost become a victim of your success, right? You know what I mean? Because like I said, we were preseason number two, we finished one. They preseason number three, they finished two. It's the same damn thing. You know what I mean? So we finished number one and we have more wins than them. So, you know, but hey, I don't have no more room anyway, though. So it's all good.
No, you like, talking.
You like that one. I don't got
more
room anyway. It's cool.
Nah, that's a bar for sure.
Okay. 2 points about the Be More thing. Like you said, like if he was at a lesser team, he could have been like chucking, but he was one of the most efficient players in the country. But okay. I was talking to somebody and they were saying like Blake Harper got a real chance of getting drafted in like a year or two. So like that went into the conversation as like, all right.
But it shouldn't have.
I know, but it's like, hey, all right, so Blake Harper gets drafted, and then you look, he didn't win his MEAC Player of the Year, which I agree, it shouldn't go into a conversation, but like that's part of their excuse. But it's just
but then honestly, it would make his story look even better. It would seem like he didn't get played. You know, it's like you know, they always talk about the story, and once again, I'm not that old, so I don't know if it's a story. You know, people always talk about like how Michael Jordan got cut from his team, and all, and that's why he got a story and all that. You know, all that. I mean, did he get cut? Who knows? I mean, nobody was around. I mean, I don't know. You know, but it's like, it'd be a story that, like, yo, he didn't get player of the year or whatever, and now he got drafted 2-3 years from now, whatever the case is. So, but it's like, don't let a potential story hurt the current, the current event. You know what I mean? Like, the current event is that, you know, that kid, Brian Moore, was killing last year. You know, that's the current event. You know, the potential story is that, yeah, Blake Harper might be a millionaire in 2 years, you know, because of the league or whatever. You know what I mean? That's a potential story, you know, but the current event was that Brian was the best player on the best team that won over 20 games. You know, it's like, come on now, what are we doing?
Nah, facts. I want to transition in a different topic. So, like, if you tapped in with college basketball, you know that, like, the HBCU event challenges get really big, and it's a big event that, you know, it's nationally televised. A lot of people tune into those games. Chris Paul got an event. Michael B. Jordan, CBS be hosting one.
And we never lost to none of those events.
Nah, I was going to say you undefeated in there. I didn't know it was all of them, but the Chris Paul, I seen you was 6-0. So that's respect. But just talk about, like, one, what those events kind of do for HBCU, specifically your program, but also like how the energy be, because I know that it was combined this year. I think it was for the first time, right? That like the whole Chris Paul event was in the same weekend.
Yeah, with the D2s too as well. Yeah, it was the D2s.
So just talk about how live that was too.
The energy be good. Like, you know, obviously it's a sense of pride. You know what I mean? Like the SWAC thing, they better than the MEAC. The MEAC thing, they better than the SWAC. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, and you know, history shows whatever you want to see. History shows. That's all, right? But it's like, and then like the, you know, for D2, the CIAA thing, they better than the, what's the SIAC and vice versa. Yeah. You know, so it's a good chance to have those cross rivalries that, you know, that even though you're not in the same conference, it's a rival. You know, it's a rivalry. You know what I mean? So, it was cool. Like the actual basketball was cool, but because like it was in the Mohegan Sun and like the
Connecticut,
the event, maybe it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't really like pumped the way it probably should be. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, you know, it was just the atmosphere was just you know what I mean. But this year they have it in Atlanta though. That should be crazy. That should be crazy in Atlanta because like Atlanta
is
like
fire. That's fire.
Yeah, one is you know, obviously it's a lot of you know, affluent African Americans down there anyway. But then there's, you know, colleges like, you know, you got your Morehouses, your Clark Atlantas, your Spelmans, your this. So it's already HBCU rooted. And, you know, more HBCUs are actually just in the South anyway. So it should be crazy. Like, and then, like, you know, it's like.
Coach, you got to patch us in.
Yeah. We'll do what we got to do. You know, when I do what I got to do for y'all. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, yeah, it should be good. It's just going to be, you know, it's going to be, you know, we ended again Jackson State, Grambling, Hampton. So it should be some good. You know, that's I did good, like. I forgot what D2s are in it, but it should be good, though. You know, it should be good.
Nah, it's definitely a cool environment and definitely going to be tuned in. And hopefully we can get out there for show. But I wanted to talk about – so you coaching, right, in Virginia, and you've been coaching at HBCU, right, last 19 years. Well, you were born in New York City. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, South – you could correct me if I'm wrong, but South Jamaica, Queens – and you know, I was born in New York City and Crown. I grew up in Crown Heights. It's, you know, it's not too close to Queens, but you know, I'm familiar with the New York grind, you know what I'm saying? And it molds a lot of people into, you know, hustlers and grinders, you know what I'm saying? And I'm just kind of wondering, you know, how your background in New York City shapes who you are today, but how you also bring your NYC background, you know, to Virginia and the South.
I mean, I bring it just to life in general, you know, and no matter where I'm at, you know, if I was coaching in South Dakota, I'm still going to have that New York grind, you know what I mean? Because it's like, that's what made me, you know, that's what, like, you know, to make it out of New York City, man, a lot of people think that, yeah, you know, it's a big city, you got all the resources, or you know, in the world and, you know, big city, people get noticed more in big cities and stuff like that. But there's also more people in big cities, right? So it's like, in order to like grind to the top or be recognized or to make it out the city or whatever, or make it out a neighborhood or whatever the case is, you know, there's 15 million people in New York City, you know what I mean? That's all trying to go for the same bone, you know what I mean? Like, it's like 15 million dogs trying to go for the same bone. So it's like, you know, like, it's a grind, it's a fight every single day. So I take that with me, you know, to my coaching, to everything like that, because, like, you know, I always say, like, I can't get complacent, you know what I mean? And so, like, what I'll do is, and a lot of people don't know, this is probably actually the first time I've actually said this, on a podcast, because you know, obviously I do a lot of these things, but it's like probably the first time I ever said this, so y'all get like exclusive here. It's like what keeps me going is that I actually, like, you know how people go and look for positive things about themselves, like, you know, like people be doing Twitter searches and all types of stuff. People be acting like they don't, but they do. You know, they Google searches or whatever, like they be doing stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, they, you know, I'll do it the reverse way. I'll Twitter search or Google search negative things that people are saying about me, and like people will say like, oh. You know, like, because, you know, Twitter will say, people on Twitter will say anything, you know, whatever. It's like, you know, Coach Jones can't coach, or Norfolk State ain't that good, or whatever. And I'll look at that, and I'll print that out, and I'll use that as motivation. You know what I mean? Like, all the positive stuff, I'll let other people say that about, you know, whatever the case is. But me personally, I'll look for the negative stuff. I'll look for the stuff that say, yo, I can't do it again. Or because I heard even when we won back-to-back championships in 21-22, and then Howard won. It's like, oh, the Norfolk State reign is over. Okay, all right. Well, look what happened in 25.
Now I'm back. Okay. Now I'm back.
All right. The bad guy's back. You know what I mean? So it's like, yo, just when you think so, it's like, I heard everything that people said. I heard all of that. I heard when we lost the championship, some of our fans and, you know, stuff was saying, you know, different things or whatever. I heard it all, and I kept it right here. and I kept it right here. You know what I mean? Like that. Okay, I'm gonna show you that we back. You know, and stuff like that. So like I'm like maybe that's like weird to some people, but it fuels me though. Like I don't like the positive stuff. It's cool. Like I mean, I'm gonna get the awards. I'm gonna get the tweet. You know, but I look for the negative stuff. Like. Yeah, say something, you know, and then that's gonna get me going. It gives me focus, like more on the task game. Because honestly, you know, fellas, for real, and once again, this is the humble part of me, but it's like, if I wasn't humble with the success that I've had here in Norfolk State, it's easy to put my feet up on the desk and be like, yo, I've done my job. You know, like, what, you know, there's nothing I can, you know, what more they want me to do? I done won 9 championships here, you know, total championships. So what you want me to do, right? But for me, it's like, okay, I'm gonna get that 10th. I'm gonna get that 11th. I'm gonna get that 12th. You know, and stuff like that. Because I'm seeing people say you can't do it again. Okay, all right. Well, watch. I'm gonna do it again. You know, and you know, so like that keeps me like in a grounded space. You know what I mean? Because it's like it's easy. I can see why some players, coaches, whatever, entertainment people, how they fall off, because it's easy to get you get pulled into your own headlines. You get pulled into that. You know what I mean?
It's
like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, for me, like I got the long term, you know, contract extension, which is a great security or whatever. But I act like I'm on an interim contract. That's how I act. Like I'm acting like that. Yeah, the contract say 2032, but I'm like, yo, man, they can get rid of me next year. Even though they probably can, and if they do, then it'll cash me out. But you know what I mean? But it's like, but at the same time, I act like that. Like they like, yo, it's like, you know, like I'm on an interim contract. That's how I approach every day. Every practice, every game, every season is that like I'm on an interim contract and everything like that. And that's what keeps me going. I think that's what fuels some of the success. And even growing up in South Jamaica, like you said, man, like people be asking me, like years ago, people asked me about like, do you feel like adversity or like when you down 20 points and stuff like that? You know what I mean? And I'm like, man, if you know how I grew up, like the adversity is when I have no food in the refrigerator, like how I'm gonna eat, being down 20 points. I mean, we could chip away and win the game. Not having some food, you know, in the refrigerator is like how I'm gonna figure out how to get this food. You know,
that's
what I mean?
When
like,
it's tough. Yeah. Yeah.
So the game, all that playing in front of 10,000, 20,000 people, that man, I'm never nervous that not one bit. That's actually easy and fun. Like the hard part was the reality of life. When you didn't have the means to do anything, you know what I mean? Like that was the hard part of life. This is like fantasy land to a certain extent. You know, it's like, you know, I'm coaching basketball for a living.
You live in the dream, man. You live in the dream.
I got a t-shirt on and shorts. I come like this every day. You know what I mean? Like this is fantasy land, man. You know, like, so, but I also realized that there's a lot of people that want to be in the seat and, I'm not gonna let you just come for this seat. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm gonna make it hard for you to come for this seat. You know, and so it's like, that's my thing, and I think that's the New York in me. That's the South Jamaica queen. So, you know, South side, we outside.
heard you. Nah, definitely like hearing like what drives these coaches, especially successful coaches that have won. What keeps them going? Like, I'm trying to get the next chip. So definitely like that New York City grind. But real quick, coach, this could just be like one sentence. I'm about to go to grad school at NYU. One piece of advice for me before I go.
For you going to grad school at NYU?
Yeah, so like living in the city, my first time and shit. One piece of advice.
Oh, living in the city. Yeah, I didn't know what kind of advice you wanted me to get. I was going to say do your schoolwork, man. You know what I mean? That's the advice I got for you.
that's not negotiable.
Yeah. But just living in the city. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Don't confuse the rudeness with the way people really are, you know, because I think a lot of times like people from New York, outside New York, like even like Coach Vickers, who was the women's coach now, you know, he's at Auburn now or whatever. Like he used to be on my staff. A lot of people don't know that, but he used to be my assistant coach. And we went there recruiting one day and like, you know, we in Times Square and people are bumping him, you know, like bumping. He's like, yo, what's the matter with these people? And I'm like, that's just the way of life down here, man. Like, you know,
that's
like
the hustle.
Yeah, no one's getting mad that they got bumped too hard, you know what I'm saying, or whatever. Like, or you know, well maybe too hard, but like just like a little brush or something like that. No one's mad about, you know, that. It's like, yo, it's a million people in Times Square. You're gonna get hit, you know. So don't think that the rude activities, you know, that people do or the rude gestures is really how people are. There's some really good people in New York City. There's some really nice people in New York City. There's just like a lot of focus and it's just a different a different exterior shell that people from New York have, because it's that grind of, like I said, 15 million people trying to go for that one bone, you know?
Mm, yeah, facts. Yeah. I appreciate that for sure.
And congrats on going to NYU. That's a heck of a school, man. That's one of the best schools in the country. So if you go in there, you must be doing something right in the classroom.
Appreciate that for sure. So we got one more question before we get into rapid fire. And right. I don't know if you've heard the Be More episode or heard what I was saying about, I'll just describe it a little bit. So I was saying basically, like, the X's and O's part, you got that down pat. But, and you're, like you said, you're comfortable. This is fantasy land at Norfolk State. But if, like, a P5 were to come at you or interested in you, like, one thing they might say is, oh, like, he's unprofessional. And what Be More said back to me is, like, well, you would be hiring him to coach basketball, not for, like, the extracurriculars or how he's presenting himself in an interview. So I'm just curious, like, how you're balancing, you know, your that aspect of New York City, that swagger, wearing drip, stuff like that, versus, like, keeping a professional in front of the camera, stuff like that.
Well, I mean, I think at this point in my career, if you're going to judge me on anything else but basketball, you're crazy. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, that's just not what it is. You know, I think that, you know, different platforms call for different things, right? You know what I mean? Like, this is a platform that's like a open conversation, you know? So it's a open conversation and more of a real insight is a different kind of feel to it than sitting in the president's office and talking to her or him, you know? So, like, you know, it's like a chameleon. You adapt to your surroundings. But at the same time, you know, that court is that court, though. You know, so it's like, you know, the court is going to be the court. So anything else around that, man, it's like, you know, it's just a chameleon to the situation that it is. It's like if even, you know, I know it's like, you know, we just talking like just regular, you know, right now. But like if I'm around my friends, it's an even different kind of talk. You know, it's like even this, even though we having a little fun and we talk a little, you know, a little junk or whatever. But it's like, you know, this is still adjusted from how I would talk if I was around my friends. Yeah. You know, it's like everything is adjusted. Everything is different. Everything is a different platform. You know what I mean? But like that 94 feet is 94 feet. You know, you put a clipboard, a basketball, and some good players on that floor for 94 feet. You gotta come see. You know, we gotta figure. You know, you gotta come see me for that 94 feet. You know what I mean? So, but it's like everything else, it's just, you know, what it is. That's why I love the and I don't know him personally. But I love the way that Syracuse football coach is. You know, he just keeps it real, man. You know, I never heard a coach recently. He said it was like an interview. He was like, because I felt him on it, but I never heard nobody actually say it. Was that you know, it was like, yo, man, this is a game that you probably be coaching if for free or whatever. You know, that's like, oh, it's a cliche, right? He's like, whoa, no, I ain't saying I'll be coaching for free now. You know, like, he's like, you know, but. That's the cliche that people say that, like, really coaches in their mind are probably thinking that what he's thinking, like, this is cool and all, but I wouldn't come here every day for free. You know what I mean? But he was actually, you know, said it. And I was like, yo, that guy, man, I like that guy right there. Like I said, I don't know who he is. You know, I don't really know him. I know he's from Jersey or something like that. Maybe Coach Fran Brown or Brown or something like that. And I was Coach like, Brown, you know, facts. Yeah, that was like, that guy real, man. I like that guy right there.
Nah, Fran Brown, definitely a great coach. And you know what I'm saying? When it comes to, you know, what the point that KJ brought up, you got to take me as you are. You know what I'm saying? You got to, with everything that comes with it, the good, the bad, the ugly, the great, the beautiful, whatever it is, you got to take me because that's who I am at the end of the day. You know what I mean? So definitely respect you staying true to who you are. And that's created success for you in your career. So definitely love that, coach. And you know, this part of the episode, we got rapid fire and top five. You ready for rapid fire, coach?
Man, depending on what you're asking, man. Nah,
I'll figure out.
I mean, so we'll see.
All right, let's do it.
I might plead the fifth on something, but we'll see.
All right, let's do it. So first rapid fire question. So I know, coach, that Eccles Memorial Hall. That's how you pronounce it. Uh-huh. Eccles Memorial Hall is a really great arena. Yeah. So I'm wondering, what are some other MEAC or maybe out of conference arenas that you always love visiting?
The VCU was crazy. That was crazy. You know what I mean? Like that was like a good atmosphere. Really, it was sold out. You know, and once again, that was like I know they get great crowds anyway, but for our game, it was great. That was crazy. Man. So like that was great. Honestly, in conference, Central always provides a good atmosphere. You know, they really have a good atmosphere. Delaware State, you know, has a pretty good atmosphere because they have like a small gym. Their gym is like almost like a elevated high school type gym because it's like bleachers, but it's like it's on four sides, you know, so it's like kind of like on top of you a little bit.
Yeah,
great atmosphere. I hate to say it because they got my player, but Grand Canyon was a great atmosphere, though. That was a great atmosphere. That's loud in there. So those are probably the top four that I probably said I've been a part of. And Tennessee is probably the nicest arena that I've been to, though. Like Tennessee, you felt like you was in the Staples Center or something like that, man. Like Madison Square Garden. I was like, yo, this is crazy right here, man. But that was probably the first arena that I was kind of in awe of, like when I first saw. You know, like, you know, now I've seen hundreds of arenas, you know, and so it's like every arena got their own little nice things. Some got some bad things or whatever. But Tennessee, I was like, yo, this is crazy. Like to come work here every day, you know, so that was nice. That was nice.
Word. When we was talking with B Moore, I think we might ask him a similar question. He said like NC Central was lit, but he was saying that Norfolk, like the crowds be on Black people time and they don't be coming till like halftime.
Yeah, well, either that or L.A. time or Miami time, because it's like, you know, like, yeah, the second half is going to be way better than the first half. Like, I don't know why we can't get there on the first half. I don't understand. Only game that we get here during the first half is Hampton, because like, that's like the bitter rival from like God knows when, you know what I mean? So it's like that game, people are here. People are actually wrapped around the building to get in, you know what I mean, for real, for that game. But like for like a regular game or even like a good game, people are going to be here into the first half. Like by the time you go do your halftime speech and come back out, it's a whole different atmosphere. It's a whole different atmosphere. Whole different atmosphere, man. Whole different atmosphere. Yeah.
Nah, I could believe it for sure. Next rapid fire question I got for you, Coach. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna try to describe this question as best I can. And so I feel like I might. We'll see how I do it. But basically, I'm wondering what's a positive about Virginia that like you love that New York doesn't have, and what's a positive about New York that Virginia doesn't have? You know what I'm saying?
Well, positive about Virginia, probably the biggest positive is the lack of traffic. You know, there's what I would say congestion, you know, but it's not traffic. You know what I mean? Like, you know, New York, there's like bumper to bumper. You might be sending something for an hour, you know, like here, yeah, you might be in some congestion for 20 minutes, 15 minutes, but it's like moving though. It's still slow moving. It's not like just like at a standstill. So, you know, I said this before, like, you know, I think I'm becoming Virginianized these days. Cause like, before when I was in New York, I would drive 45 minutes from Queens to Brooklyn, you know, hang out or whatever the case is. Now it's something 20 minutes away. I'm like, man, I don't know if I want to go, man. You know, it's like, so, cause it's like people around here don't like driving that much. So, yeah, but the traffic, but New York though, the best thing about New York, I mean, so many things about New York that's better than any other city in the world though, is that like, I could go get a real meal in New York at 3 a.m. You know what I mean? Like there is a restaurant open. There's actually probably 1,000 restaurants open somewhere in New York City that I could go get. If I want to go get salmon, steak, whatever it is at 3 a.m, I'm going to be able to do that. You know, there's other places around the country that you might be able to just get some pizza or something like that or whatever. But New York City, it's going to be a restaurant that's open, you know, 3 a.m. You know what I mean? So it's really the city that never sleeps, like they say, man. So it's like, that's the part that took me a little while to get used to when I got out here, though.
Nah, thanks. I'm out in New Hampshire right now. Everything closes at 10 p.m., man. It's crazy.
Nah, that's crazy, yeah.
And then last rapid fire question. So you're, Coach, you're pretty funny yourself, Coach. So I'm wondering, who are some players that you've had in the past that you feel like are just as funny as you are?
Oh, man.
Give me like one or two top.
Joe Bryan, he was funny. He had moments. He had good moments. You know what I mean? He was actually funnier than I thought, because like on his visit, he didn't hardly talk. But when he got here, he couldn't stop talking. So it's like, you know, like, you know, he was actually funnier than I thought. We got a guy that's actually now assistant coach now with me. Keonze Chavis is funny. Trying to think about the third person, but I don't know. At this point, there's been a lot of players, but you know, those would probably be the top two guys, give or take. That's been pretty funny.
No, that's tough. We got to end this episode with a starting five edition. So if you're a coach assembling like your ideal lineup, point guard through center, who's your lineup going to be? And this edition is going to be the best players that you've coached. So throughout your whole career, give me their name and position where you coach them at, your lineup.
Center would be Kylo Quinn. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Kylo Quinn would be the center. Small forward would be Devin Ebanks. You know, that played with the Lakers for a little bit and stuff like that or whatever. So, you know, I coached him in AAU. Devin Ebanks. My shooting guard would be Danny Green. I was coaching him in high school.
High school, facts.
Yeah. So Danny Green. So I'm missing with the power forward and then
point
guard. Power forward, you know, it's not usually a lot of good bigs no more. So it's like I kind of came through that era when it's not a lot of good bigs no more. But power forward, if I had to go somebody next to Kylo Quinn, Chris Bankston was good. Chris Bankston was good here. He was good. He was really good. So he would probably be like somewhere in that range, even though he's probably not truly a power forward. He's probably more of a center. But if I had to go somebody, because being at college 6'10", if I'm going to build a team, hey, I'm going to put 6'10 and 6'9 next to each other. Oof. You know, with and Devin is 6'9 and Danny is 6'6. So that's a pretty big team right there. I wish I coached them, man. I'll be in a, you know, this might be a different conversation right here. You know, this, like, I wish I had all of them guys together. That would have been, we'd be in a Final Four killing, you know. So, and then point guard, see, that's the toughest position because there's been so many, you know, point guard's such a dime a dozen, right? You know, so point guard, that's tough, man. I've been around a lot of good point guards, man. That's tough.
I need an answer, though.
And I'm going to go with an answer outside of Norfolk State so none of the players, people get mad. I'll go with this kid, Scott Machado. He played in high school. He played at Iona from New York City. I think he's still playing overseas now or whatever. So he'd probably be my point because he was like probably the purest point I had, but he could score it. Like I've had other guys like you know, even recent where Brian used to play the point and you know, Christian Ings, but those guys really wasn't right, really pure point guards for real. Like, you know, they were like really scorers trapped in point guard bodies, you know. But like Scott Machado was really like a point guard. So I think that if I had Scott, Danny Green, Devin Ebanks, Chris Bankston, Kylo Quinn, I think that's
a natty.
A lot of games. I think that we will be cutting down the nets in a different way that game. You know, maybe I need to call those guys up and see if they want to get a TBT team together. You know what I mean?
Okay.
You know, like, but all those guys are like 35 now, 36. So like they ain't trying to fight. Yeah. Except for Bankston. Bankston's still young, but you know that would be a hell of a TBT team, though. I'll tell you that much. I don't know. You know,
set it up.
Maybe fill in guys like Joe Bryan, B Moore as like, you know, 6th, 7th guys or whatever, man. Ah. Oh, that'd be
for the mill.
Yeah, give me that mill with that crew. You know.
But that's gonna do it for another episode of Not Even D2. We appreciate you getting on the pod. It's been a good convo, and we big Norfolk State fans moving forward. So good luck next year.
For sure. Thanks, man. Appreciate y'all. Keep doing what y'all doing. You know, keep doing positive things and keep having the great interviews.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.